This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S. President Barack Obama addresses the nation after a mass shooting in San Bernardino, California, was deemed an act of terrorism. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In a country where mass shootings have sadly become all too common, President Obama last week told the American public that the San Bernardino shooting, which left 14 dead and many more wounded, was, quote, an act of terrorism designed to kill innocent people, unquote. Even as he defended his administration's efforts in combating terrorism and the so-called Islamic State group in particular, he warned that the threat facing the United States had evolved into a new phase. President Obama suggested that easy access to assault weapons, radicalization via social media, and the chaos of Iraq and Syria, which helped fuel the rise of ISIL or the so-called Islamic State, have converged to render the United States more vulnerable than ever to such attacks.
Over the last few years, however, the terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. As we've become better at preventing complex, multifaceted attacks like 9/11, terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. It is this type of attack that we saw at Fort Hood in 2009, in Chattanooga earlier this year, and now in San Bernardino. And as groups like ISIL grew stronger amidst the chaos of war in Iraq and then Syria, and as the internet erases the distance between countries, we see growing efforts by terrorists to poison the minds of people like the Boston Marathon bombers and the San Bernardino killers.
Law enforcement officials have uncovered evidence that the two shooters who killed 14 in California on December 2nd had links to Islamist extremists and the so-called Islamic State group, which claimed responsibility for November's coordinated terrorist attack in Paris. The commander-in-chief used his Oval Office address to update the nation on the latest in the military campaign against the so-called Islamic State group, more intelligence sharing, more airstrikes, and new U.S. Special Forces teams operating in Iraq and Syria, but also to chastise his critics and Congress for their response to the terrorist attacks.
Well, here's what I want you to know. The threat from terrorism is real, but we will overcome it. We will destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us. Our success won't depend on tough talk or abandoning our values or giving in to fear. That's what groups like ISIL are hoping for. Instead, we will prevail by being strong and smart, resilient and relentless, and by drawing upon every aspect of American power.
The leading Republican presidential contender Donald Trump set off a political firestorm with his proposal to temporarily block Muslims from entering the United States. Trump's idea was quickly condemned by several of his Republican rivals, as well as the three Democratic presidential contenders. President Obama warned against betraying our values, which only plays into the hands of groups like ISIL. In addition to airstrikes on ISIL's leaders and infrastructure and intelligence sharing with European allies, President Obama said that Washington is establishing a process and timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political solution to the Syrian war so that all parties can focus on the common goal of destroying ISIL. And he asked Congress to take immediate and specific steps to address the challenge, including enacting common-sense gun safety measures.
To begin with, Congress should act to make sure no one on a no-fly list is able to buy a gun. What could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a semi-automatic weapon? This is a matter of national security. We also need to make it harder for people to buy powerful assault weapons, like the ones that were used in San Bernardino. I know there are some who reject any gun safety measures, but the fact is that our intelligence and law enforcement agencies, no matter how effective they are, cannot identify every would-be mass shooter, whether that individual is motivated by ISIL or some other hateful ideology. What we can do, and must do, is make it harder for them to kill.
President Obama also advocated stronger screening for those who come to America without a visa, legislation that both the House of Representatives and the Senate are working on. In addition, President Obama called out Congress for failing to pass a new military force authorization for the fight against ISIL, which began 16 months ago. The White House has made repeated pleas to Congress seeking clarity for the legal justification for action. However, as he's done several times previously, the president pushed back against calls for a larger ground American force in the region, insisting that his policy of training and equipping friendly forces in Iraq and Syria is the only path towards long-term peace. Well, for two perspectives on the aftermath of the terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California, and President Obama's multidimensional approach to defeating ISIL, which is radicalizing people around the world, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Jim Kessler is Senior Vice President for Policy at the centrist Third Way, and Stephen Bucci. He's Director of the Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation. That's a conservative think tank also based here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Stephen Bucci, I'd like to begin with you for your reaction to President Obama's address. Most people say it's not a change in strategy, sort of a doubling down on what he's doing, trying to reassure the public after this terrible mass shooting deemed a terrorist attack. What are your thoughts?
Well, on the good side, the president did recognize this as a terrorist act and, in fact, finally acknowledged that the shooting on Fort Hood was also terrorism and was not workplace violence as the U.S. Army had characterized it sort of in a profoundly odd way. So there was some encouragement there. I'm afraid that the president's speech, while recognizing the problem, really didn't offer much in the way of addressing it in a terribly effective way, either domestically or the international component, which, frankly, is really the key.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your reaction.
I was glad that the president made those remarks. I do think the inevitable just happened in San Bernardino. And yes, it happened in Fort Hood as well. But there is very, very easy availability of firearms in this country. It's always been a problem for, you know, just your run-of-the-mill crime and even your run-of-the-mill mass shooter. It was only a matter of time until terrorist elements in this country started taking advantage of those weak gun laws. And I think we're going to see more of these in the future. So I do think there needs to be heightened efforts overseas through Homeland Security, but gun laws have to be addressed as well.
Certainly. We're going to look at that in a moment, the gun laws, the easy access to assault weapons. Back to you, Stephen Bucci. But first, let's take a look at the other aspect that President Obama addressed, the military strikes against the so-called Islamic State, other measures that he has spoken about. For example, he asked Congress for the so-called AUMF, that authorization to use military force. How important is that in terms of ramping up a more effective military offense?
Well, it's not particularly needed at all. The AUMF that's already in effect that was promulgated in 2001 against Al-Qaeda is still in effect. ISIS is a direct derivative of Al-Qaeda. So he has all the legal authority he needs to do what he's doing and, frankly, do more if he'd like to. I would have no problem with Congress passing a new AUMF if they so desired, except that the one that the president's requested has built-in restrictions on it. An AUMF is not a strategy. It's just Congress giving its blessing and agreement to the president to take action.
Jim Kessler, does President Obama need a new AUMF, this authorization, to use military force, or is this just a red herring or not necessarily mandatory?
I think it would be optimal if he had a new authorization to use military force. You know, we have a very divided Congress on this and other matters. We're at the point where we need to have fresh thinking on our strategies in the Middle East and combating these stateless terrorist organizations. We need to ask more of our allies in this as well, but America needs to be the leader on this. America is going to have to lead the way in fighting this terrorist threat. But what's happening right now, I wouldn't say we're winning.
Well, back to you, Stephen Bucci, and that leads us into, in fact, the strategy in the Middle East, particularly to counter the so-called Islamic State. We have to look back, how did we get there, whether it's Iraq, the aftermath of the situation there where the United States did pull its troops out. Many criticize that. Then, of course, you have the situation in Syria where President Bashar al-Assad turned on his own people after they protested for greater freedom. And the point that Jim Kessler made, which is that the United States needs more allies, particularly in the region. That is certainly true. But many of those allies are saying, Sunni states in particular, that Bashar al-Assad is the other side of the coin in terms of ISIL, so that they will not come on board more vigorously unless greater efforts to oust Bashar al-Assad, who is barrel bombing his own people and creating most of the chaos that is leading people to leave the country, the flow of refugees.
that they won't come on board. So we're sort of at a difficult point countering ISIL. President Obama laid out his strategy, doubling down the airstrikes, but many are saying we still need ground forces, maybe not United States, others, but how do you see it?
First of all, I don't get a chance to say I have sympathy for President Obama very often, and in this case, I do. Syria is a terrible situation. Bashar al-Assad is not part of the solution. The Russians have made that statement. That's complete nonsense. He is probably the biggest recruitment element for ISIS and other radical groups in the area. He does need to go, but to be honest with you, there's not a lot of good choices as to who to replace him. But for us, ISIS is the problem right now. They're the threat to not just the region, but to the whole world. And now, as we see after San Bernardino, at least in an indirect way, to the United States proper. They need to be dealt with. You know, we can look at guns, we can look at pipe bombs, we can look at knives, but it all comes down to the radical Islamist ideology that ISIS chases. It's not common to the rest of the Muslim world. It's very much a fringe ideology. That ideology must be crushed. And until we remove the draw for recruitment of ISIS in presently Iraq and Syria, they're going to continue to recruit people at an alarming rate. And right now, the president's strategy is not sufficient to remove that.
When you say remove the draw for recruitment, you're referring to Bashar al-Assad.
No, Assad is allowing them to recruit as well. But from our standpoint, we've got to get rid of ISIS.
Right.
And that means literally crushing them in the military sense. I'm not a proponent of reinvading Iraq and sending large conventional formations back there, but I think there's a big bit of ground between sending big elements and what we're doing today.
All right. Well, turning to you, Jim Kessler, regarding, you know, how to combat the threat of ISIL, this is a two-sided coin. Their radical Islamist ideology is a draw, but at the same time, President Obama said very rightly, they are a criminal terrorist network. I mean, they are selling oil and they're extorting ransoms. It has nothing to do with even any perverted version of Islam. At the same time, you have President Bashar al-Assad being now reinforced by Russia, Iran. Also, his very presence and his persecution of moderate mainstream rebels and civilians again draws people to whatever groups that are combating President Assad. So we are in a bind. And then one more thing, and that is that many analysts say that any kind of ground force, particularly if it's U.S. troops, would only play into their hands, that is, groups like ISIL, that they would double down and we would be in another so-called, you know, morass.
So I agree. There's not a lot of easy choices out there. And if you go back in history, not too long ago, the invasion of Iraq is probably the match that lit this fuse. So you do something and you get it wrong in that region, you pay a price for years and years and years. Putin is not going to be part of the solution here, too. He's part of the problem. These terrorist organizations do best in chaos. They do best in a stateless environment. So Assad is playing this game in which he wants weakness in certain areas and wants a distraction to fight so that he can stay in power. That's dividing the country three different ways. But clearly, there needs to be a more continued aggressive effort at combating and strangling ISIL and these terrorist organizations. That is the primary threat right now in the Middle East.
Indeed. And of course, we are, as the American expression goes, between a rock and a hard place, because we can double down on the airstrikes, many analysts say. But again, airstrikes alone are insufficient. And yet the ground troops, where are they coming from? The Sunni forces might not get on board until and unless, you know, the United States and others also are equally forceful about getting rid of Bashar al-Assad and those who support him. At any rate, you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Jim Kessler. He's Senior Vice President for Policy at the Centrist Third Way, and Stephen Bucci. He's Director of the Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Heritage Foundation, and that's a conservative think tank. Both groups are based here in Washington. And we're discussing the U.S. debate over how to combat terrorism in the wake of the terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website, voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Akram Shah. He's a loyal listener from Lahore, Pakistan. If you want to hear your name on this show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, back to you, Stephen Bucci. And let's take a look at some of the other proposals that President Obama outlined. And they do have to do with gun regulation, because even if we had stricter gun regulation, and even if that would not prevent some of the mass shootings we've seen, it certainly would be a greater deterrent for people with terrorist tendencies or unstable people, irresponsible people, to get their hands on assault weapons. What about his proposal about no one on a no-fly or watch list should be allowed to purchase firearms, particularly the so-called the AR-15, the assault weapons?
Well, the problem you have with that one is that the no-fly list, which seems to be the problem, is a list that you can get on without any particular due process. You can just be put on that list and restricted from flying because we don't have a constitutional right to fly on airplanes. You do have a constitutional right as a citizen to purchase firearms. So if you restrict their ability to do that with no accompanying due process, you're going to have a legal challenge that's going to get you in some degree of trouble. I think the answer to that is we probably ought to clean up the no-fly list to get all the people off of it that are on there by mistake because of name conventions and spellings, and make sure that the people that are on that list have gone through some sort of due process review. And if there's some evidence for them then being on there, then I think you might have a better case of using that to also then tip towards folks. You know, it's against the law if you're a felon or you have mental health issues to buy firearms. We probably ought to have it if there's evidence that you have been involved with terrorist activity. Right now, the no-fly list is probably not the list to use to make that cut, though.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, you, of course, mentioned this toxic nexus between the easy access of firearms, particularly assault weapons here in this country, and terrorist activity. We're seeing that in San Bernardino. What about President Obama's proposal about the no-fly list, that no one should be allowed to purchase a firearm on that list? Do you see the same problems as Stephen Bucci?
Well, if there are problems, they're fixable. If there needs to be some cleanup of that no-fly list, then let's clean up that no-fly list. Then if you can't fly, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. In terms of the due process, I'm less concerned about it because if you get denied a firearm, there is a process in which you can contest that and you can then get the firearm. But we need to realize that just as the terrorist threat is evolving in the Middle East, it is evolving here in the United States as well. The weak link for the U.S. is very easily available firearms, some of which will be legally purchased and is going to be very hard to stop, but a lot of which could be illegally purchased, which is also hard to stop because our laws make it very hard to prosecute people who are doing illegal things with guns, particularly buying and selling guns.
Well, back to you, Stephen Bucci. Certainly this issue of gun regulation, gun violence, will be with us for some time to come, unfortunately. But let's move on to another proposal that may have a bipartisan support, and I'd like to get your take on its effectiveness, and that has to do with the visa waiver program, because many of these homegrown terrorists, whether here in the United States or in Europe, they carry, you know, European passports or American passports. But in this case, we're looking at people with European passports that could potentially do harm here in this country. How do you see that particular proposal moving forward?
Well, be honest with you, I'm a little bit concerned about that. The visa waiver program is actually in place, and it improves our security. It doesn't lessen it. Some people think that if you're coming from a country in the program, that you just get on an airplane and fly here. You don't get any checks. You just get a free ticket into the country. That's not true. The only thing that you skip compared to the standard system to get in here is you don't do the face-to-face interview with a junior State Department or Foreign Service national person at the embassy or consulate. You're still run through all of the databases, all of the various terrorist and law enforcement lists that we have. And in fact, by being in that program, countries give our law enforcement and intel people access to their databases, which they would not necessarily have access to if the country weren't in the program. So while I think we probably ought to tighten up all of these systems, we need to do a better job of scrutinizing them and making sure that if somebody pops on for some reason or tells a lie like the shooter in San Bernardino did on her K-1 visa application, that it's discovered. But the visa waiver program is probably not the right one to go after because that's one that actually has helped us security-wise, not lessened it.
But isn't his proposal to, in fact, tighten it up.
The law that just got through the House and that is going to the Senate would actually put some delays on the program that frankly could result in the other member nations in the program saying, well, fine, we're going to do the same thing to America. And so all of the business people, the diplomats, the military folks who travel back and forth are going to have a lot of hindrances they didn't have otherwise. So I think this is one that seems to be one the president's comfortable going after, but there's some other programs we probably ought to tighten up first.
Such as?
The refugee screening. We need to tighten that up. Just normal immigration. The K-1 visa for the shooter in San Bernardino is the key example right now. She gave a false address on her application. Nobody checked. That's a problem. And we need to be hardcore about enforcing the already existing rules. If we do that, I think we'll catch more people that are problematic.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your view on this visa waiver program, a rare moment of bipartisan agreement, will that make a difference?
I mean, it's hard to say. If you go back to 9/11, a lot of the plotters, they came here on the student visa program. Now we're going to be looking at the marriage waiver. Probably most Americans didn't realize there was or the fiancé waiver. They didn't realize there was such a thing as a fiancé waiver. Now suddenly that's going to be things that people are talking about over the holidays. All of these systems could use tightening. What we want to be able to do is be able to tighten these systems, but not fundamentally alter the openness of this nation where people can come and visit. People can move here if they do the right things. We are a nation of immigrants. One out of every 8 people who are currently in the United States was not born in this country. So that is what makes America what it is. We want to maintain those principles and also keep the country safe. Stephen's point about how the visa waiver program might do a little bit more harm than good. If that's the case, then that should be fixed as well. I think the intent of Congress is to do the right thing. I hope they do the right thing.
And for the last question, back to you, Stephen Buczyk. Anything to add or subtract with respect to how the United States can better combat the threat of ISIL and other Islamist terrorist organizations? And with respect to the military side or these other proposals, and at the same time, staying true to our values?
Well, I think that the values are the key. That's our foundation in this country. And those should always have paramount place of protection in everything we do. We need to go after ISIS in Iraq and Syria. We can do that with our special operations forces. The president is kind of playing around the edges with that. I think we need to do more of it using local ground forces, probably a lot more air power, but not air power alone. At the same time, we need to tighten up all of our systems that allow people to come into this country to make sure they're doing the kind of background checks that are needed and we're enforcing the rules. I don't think we should shut down our borders. That would fundamentally change the United States. And we need to understand that every citizen needs to be aware of what's going on. You know, on one hand, you can't say, if you see something, say something. And then on the other hand, say, well, you know, but don't be watching and spying on your neighbors. We've got to find that middle ground where we all contribute to the security. America is going to make it through this, and I think we can do it without the kind of fundamental changes that some are suggesting, because I think those changes would be detrimental to the spirit and the real meaning of what it is to be an American.
Such as Donald Trump calling for a ban on all Muslims coming to the United States.
In my status as a 401c3, I cannot comment on candidates' specific comments.
All right. Well, I'll let Jim Kessler have the last word regarding our strategy. Are we on the right track, or are we treading water until President Obama leaves office and passes it on to the next administration?
Well, first, I can feel free to say something about Donald Trump banning all Muslims. It is the worst idea of the year in which there's been a lot of bad ideas out there. It's reprehensible. You know, Steve talked about preserving American values. This is not America's values. What we saw with San Bernardino is a page turning on domestic terrorists, and the future of domestic terrorism in this country is not planes flying into buildings, but it's going to be low-tech types of attacks, and it's going to most likely be folks getting guns and killing people and creating mayhem in random places in this country. Not necessarily the Times Squares and the Washington, D.C.s, but in other parts of the country. We can respect Second Amendment rights, preserve those rights, and do a lot more to keep guns out of the hands of people who are going to do irreparable harm to this country. And we need to look at those things. And I think both parties need to look at this issue in a fresh way. And Republicans, I think, in particular, need to stop being reflexively opposed to any new gun law. We have entered a new era, and we need to act accordingly.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at the Third Way, and Stephen Bucci, Director of the Center for Foreign and National Security Policy at the Conservative Heritage Foundation. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Jackson Witt. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.